Gotham, a crazy podcast about DC, with your host E-Rock and PD. When we speak up, get your geeks up, cause you know you about to get geeked up. So sit back, relax, and get comfy. Lose your mind like Solomon Grundy, and listen to a show that won't be forgotten, coming straight out of Gotham.
And hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Straight Outta Gotham. We have episode 9 on the horizons. We are a proud member of the Batman Podcast Network, hosted by Batman on Film. I am your host from the Turnpike side of the tri-state area. I'm Peter Vera, and today we are recording on July 2nd, 2020. And as always, we have a great show for you today, a few interesting topics. Now, let me get to my co-host here. My co-host, the only man to swim from New Rochelle to Bayville in under 14 hours, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Eric Holzman.
Hello, Pete. Yes, you're bringing back some memories of that fateful 14-hour trek.
Who's Michael Phelps? Who?
I have no idea.
Never heard of him. Aquaman? That'd be you, my friend.
No, exactly. I'm the only name in swimming. And if anyone tells you otherwise, shut them up real quick.
You are a fish. You're probably a fluke or a flounder.
I don't know. I think they might be. That could be fish that's up there. they're on the South Shore of Long Island, so that's what people fish for all the time on the South Shore. So
there you go.
Very possible. I could have that in my blood. But yes. Hello, Pete, and hello, everybody. We're back once again. It's episode 9. This is going fast.
One more to double digits. One more. That's crazy. Yeah.
It's funny because today, as you know, and I'll put this out there for everyone, I was building, I was setting up our Facebook page that we have now, folks. So if you're on Facebook, you search Straight Outta Gotham and you can find our Facebook page. But I also was setting up the YouTube page. And I was going through the videos. I was converting the audio to video and uploading it to YouTube. And I was just going through the month's worth of topics that it's little almost over 2 months now worth of topics that we've discussed. And it's kind of cool just to read the descriptions and to go through them and going through them. Like, we've really covered a lot of material in the short time we've been doing this, but we've had a lot of material to go over in this pandemic. While life has slowed down, it doesn't feel like the gossip has.
It doesn't seem to have slowed down at all. In fact, it seems to have ramped up, especially yesterday.
Oh, yeah. So yesterday, it happened a couple days ago. At first, Ray Fisher, who played Cyborg in Justice League, tweeted a picture of what he said at Comic-Con, where he said that Zach picked a good person to take over in Joss Whedon. So he posted he tweeted something with that video and that and he said, I want to retract everything I said in this. So that was the first thing we got from him. And then obviously people were talking about it. What's he mean? Blah, blah, blah. I've heard things. So yesterday he doubled down on that. And he took it a step further. So I'm going to read the exact quote because it's only – I don't want to misquote him or have anyone say I took anything out of context. So he said yesterday, quote, Joss Whedon's on-set treatment of the cast and crew of Justice League was gross, abusive, unprofessional, and completely unacceptable. He was enabled in many ways by Geoff Johns and John Berg. And then he said, accountability is greater than entertainment. So, of course, this sparked a lot of controversy and a lot of discussion in social media. And it's been ongoing now for the whole day, as this tends to happen. And then we had Alan Tudyk, who is a friend of Joss Whedon. And he says he tweeted as well, where he said, I wasn't there, but I have known Joss for 17 years, and I honestly can't even imagine it. And I have a pretty good imagination. So we have that being said as well. And Fisher, obviously, I don't think we've heard from him since. I haven't seen anything else from him. What, did he say anything else? Have you, Pete, seen anything else?
In regards to Joss Whedon, no. He is actually, I'm looking at his Twitter feed right now. He's actually only had two tweets. And they were retweets in the since that statement. So Ray pretty much dropped the bomb and left the room.
Yeah, that's pretty much what happened. And obviously everyone at that point was then waiting for some kind of response from Whedon or Jeff Johns or John Berg. And John Berg's the only one that really said anything. And it was kind of weak what he said, but this is what he said. I remember Fisher being upset that we wanted him to say booyah, which is a well-known saying of Cyborg in the animated series. And he said that Fisher's claims are categorically untrue and that both himself and Johns never enabled any unprofessional behavior. So now we have this whole big mess, right? And then we have, obviously, yeah, as of now, it's he said, she said. Nobody, we don't have any substantiation from either side. We don't have any substantiation from Fisher's side. None of the other cast members have spoken out. But obviously, it's a touchy topic. And you don't ever want to just take someone's accusation and throw it away. Obviously, you want to get to the bottom of the story and find out more about where this comes from and if anyone else corroborates the story. So, Pete, though, when you first heard this, what was your reaction?
Well, my initial reaction is it's another day, more just news about the horrible production of Justice League. And you're just like, man, this doesn't end. We've been, you know, we're 3 years from this movie?
Yeah,
3 years from this movie, and we're still hearing all the dirty laundry that's being aired out. It's I don't know who to believe, because I like, you know, Ray Fisher has said something, and it's definitely worth looking into. But I wasn't there. I don't really know what to say about this. I reached out to a guy I know. I asked him, I said, hey, have you heard anything about this? I know you give your ear to the ground a lot. And he goes, no, believe it or not, I've actually heard the opposite of everything that Fisher said. And I took that as an interesting statement. I'm not saying Fisher's a liar, or by any means, but I don't have any more information other than what he said. And if what he said is true, then it is unacceptable. But you know, it's just, I know Joss Whedon isn't the most liked guy right now. You know, he's had a lot of his dirty laundry aired out recently within the past couple of years. So it just seems to really have piled on him at this moment in time.
Right. I mean, it wouldn't be unbelievable if it were true, right?
No.
For everything we've heard about Joss Whedon. And again, a lot of those stories as well were something that someone said and then they kind of disappeared. One of the big things people keep pointing to is that he apparently, the scene in Justice League where the Flash, Ezra Miller's character, falls on top of Wonder Woman after saving her, a lot of people said that that scene was something that he wanted so badly, but Gal Gadot didn't really want to shoot it, be involved, so they said they used a body double. And there, it is true that in the scene, the head is kind of turned, Wonder Woman's head's kind of turned, so you don't really see who it is. Mm-hmm. But then I also heard, I think it was this, someone also said that he like cornered her and said he'd ruin her career if she didn't do it. Now, I can't imagine that to be true.
It seems like her career is on the rise and Joss's career has kind of leveled out a little bit. So I don't necessarily, you know, think that would be a wise statement for him to say. And I don't think he's the type of person who actually has that kind of power, you know?
Like, I don't.
He plateaued, and I think he's on the down part of his career, so to speak, and she's on the opposite. So, you know, I can't imagine him having any kind of power over her at this point in time at all.
Right. And I don't see the benefit of him saying that, depending on where they were in the shoot at the time. I mean, you wouldn't want to piss off, you know, one of your stars in the film. You say something like that, that's obviously not going to be taken well.
Yeah.
So... And I just, that part, I don't believe that at all. I do believe maybe she didn't want to do the shot and he was like, well, I wrote it, so I want to do it. And there's possibly a body double there, but that happens a lot of times. This is not exclusive to just this film. So yeah, but like you said, we've heard a lot about Joss Whedon in the past. So I would not be surprised if this was true. I'm not calling Ray Fisher a liar. Maybe that was his experience. Maybe he and Joss didn't get along. And maybe Whedon was just had a limited time to fix what he was asked to fix. And he was a little harsh, and maybe he was a little more directive, I guess, than maybe in when you have a normal time and you can kind of be a little bit looser and have more discussion with the actors.
Justice League is, it was very emotional. Tensions were high. I mean, like the atmosphere, I can't imagine, was great for everybody. Just, you know, having essentially filming one movie, the director getting fired, having a new guy come in, reshooting that, the same movie, changing it up a bit, a lot. And then, you know, just, I can't imagine everyone was just, you know, running on an empty, you know, I can't imagine they were happy with that. And it's just like, and I'm sure a lot of these guys are still very faithful to Zach, especially Ray. I mean, you know, Zach kind of jump-started his career. Ray was a stage actor. He had no film experience, and Zach took a shot on this guy, and this should have been his breaking out role. You know, he had that small cameo in BVS, which would lead to Justice League and eventually his solo movie. So, like, you know, Ray lost a lot in terms of the director change and whatever Sujahara mandated at that time. So, you know, essentially Ray Fisher's character, so the character of Cyborg was almost essentially cut from the movie, you know, basically. I mean, Zach talks about him as the heart of the film, and yeah, there's none of that present. So this is, I could see why Ray is very bitter, because this should have been his breakout role. But I just, you know, again, like, you read this statement and you're like, man, Justice League again. Like, you try to move past this, but it's weird. It keeps coming back, and every time it does, it gets uglier and uglier. Like, it's just, I always wanted a Justice League movie. I wanted to see the you know, the heroes unite and see Batman with Superman and the Flash and, you know, Green Lantern. I didn't get that, but you know what I mean. Like, wanted this, like, you know, as a comic book reader, you want this, especially, you know, we're like, what, 5 Avengers movies deep at this point, and we're just getting a Justice League film. Like, this is what I've been waiting for. And then to get this, I'm like, man, this is, I would much rather have Justice League Mortal.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, that part is 100% true. Like, again, I don't want to go back and rehash this, but we've spoken in our group many times, and I've always said they should have just let Zack Snyder do his thing.
He should have made his 4-hour movie, and they should have moved on with it, because you know what? This has caused way too many headaches, and every decision that Warner Brothers made was wrong. It just was. You know, like, they should have let Zack finish his movie. Whedon never should have been brought in, and they probably should have just let Zach go after Justice League, but they didn't do that. And for whatever reason at the time that Sujahara and company thought was the right reason, I mean, it's all blown up in his face. And if anything, he's probably the guy that should get most of this blame, and him not being employed by Warner Brothers has kind of given him a free pass here.
Exactly. And that's kind of the next part of this whole thing, is that he explicitly also names John Berg and Jeff Johns in this tweet. And we've discussed about Jeff Johns before. When we had Justin and Kowalski on here, we all discussed the Jeff Johns, how he's getting a lot of crap for his role in this. And like I said from the beginning, I believe he just was doing the job he was hired to do. He was told, you know, fix this by his bosses. He came in, he did the best job that he thought he could, and that's what we got. I don't know how much he was on set. I don't know how much communication was going on between Johns, Berg, Whedon, and the cast. I have no idea. Like, that's all stuff. So, again, not something we can substantiate. I have no idea if what Ray Fisher's saying is true. But you're right when you're saying that the venom is kind of being spewed at the wrong people. Again, this should have been at Sujahara. And he's not around anymore, so.
And Berg's not doing himself any favors. He literally should have said no comment. He should have kept his mouth shut, because now, you know, he put his foot in his mouth. It's, you know, you said a stupid statement in response to something that is setting off a lot of people, and that was just not the right thing to do. You should have just kept your mouth shut.
Right. He could have just said, I categorically deny this, it's not true. He could have just said that and left it.
The booyah thing, he should have just, he should, I don't know what he was thinking.
Yeah.
I don't know if he was trying to make a joke out of it, but it was totally the wrong move.
Yeah. It didn't come across well. That was the part when I saw it, I was like, oh my God, like, like, what are you doing, dude?
And to be honest, I can't see Ray Fisher as someone who has preached Borg life and really kind of really taken the role of a cyborg Victor Stone, you know, to heart. I can't see him arguing that either. So it's he just didn't do himself any favors, Mr. Berg. He just didn't.
Yeah. Yeah. That whole thing too. Well, I don't know who to believe. Like, you know, like you said, it doesn't seem like that would be something Ray Fisher would get all up in arms about and get this mad about that's why he would say what he said.
Mm-hmm.
That just doesn't add up. But I do want to focus on something. I just want to say something very quickly, and you can comment if you want. You don't have to if you don't want to. But I think there's a huge problem that we have in society, period, that we're so quick to just believe the accuser. We're so quick to just want to cancel somebody because someone makes an accusation. Now, I'm a paralegal by trade. So anytime as a paralegal, you're presented with a case or some kind of fact, you're supposed to go through them all and to substantiate those facts before you say, okay, I believe you. Let's go. If you're going to take on the case, let's take on the case. Well, that's where I always come from when any kind of accusation is put out there. Someone makes an accusation. I try not to jump the gun and say, yes, they're 100% true. I said, okay, let me see what else we hear. Let me see what else, you know, we hear about the situation, any other claims, anyone comes in to corroborate the story. And I think that's the way we should be. This, not to get too like political or patriotic, but the country is founded on our legal system is innocent until proven guilty. So when I think about all of that and I put that all together, every time I see someone just rush in either way, rush to defend someone and say he's 100% true, there's no way this is 100% accurate, or someone saying it's total and complete BS, I don't believe it. Either way, you kind of should just step back and just say, okay, let's see how this plays out. Because if not, you're accusing people or you're believing people and accusing people at the same time of something they may have never done. So I'm just putting that out there. I think we as a society need to change that reaction. And no, it's easier said than done. We're a society also of instant gratification. So you kind of want something to be either true or false immediately. That's just not how things work. So that's kind of my little rant/ public service announcement to the people who listen to us. But what do you think about that, Pete? Or do you not have any?
I wouldn't have gone about it the way that Ray Fisher did. Me personally, I don't like sharing issues and stuff like that with people. I internalize a lot of things. So to see somebody else do this, I see this and I say, okay, there's something behind this. And for someone to go to this length to just put this out in the public. And, you know, I know Joss right now, again, is not exactly he's already guilty in the court of public opinion in a lot of things. So it seems like, you know, he can't catch a break. And he's not making a lot of good decisions, but I just, you know, it just seems like every time something happens, anything we hear about Justice League is never good. So, you know, whenever I see those two words together, I kind of cringe a little bit because it's like, what now?
Yeah, I think we're kind of waiting for that documentary or that that miniseries about what happened with this production of this film, because it is ripe.
I tweeted this out the other day, like, you know, rest in peace, John Schnepp, because if there was ever a documentary outside of The Death of Superman Lives, what happened to be made, this was it, you know, documentary on Justice League. And he did such a fabulous job. If you haven't seen The Death of Superman Lives, what happened, I highly recommend it.
I've seen that.
It's absolutely fantastic.
It is.
And John Schnepp, you know, rest in peace, did a wonderful job on that. And it's just, you know, again, just something else. You know, Justice League, just my jaw drops to the floor. If it's not written on the pages of a DC comic, I get really, really eerie of the two words Justice League.
Well, not Zack Snyder's Justice League. We're all waiting for that.
Yeah, I mean, and that's weird, you know, and coming from someone who doesn't hate the theatrical cut of Justice League, because I look at it as a live action cartoon.
Yes.
You know, I rank it up there with the likes of like Rise of the Silver Surfer and like, you know, Batman Forever. You know, it's not the worst of the worst. It could definitely be a hell of a lot better. But I am excited for the Snyder cut. And, I feel like this is the beginning of a snowball. Like, I'm waiting to see what the other members of the cast have to say about these incidents.
Yeah, that's where I'm at now. Now I'm like, all right, we have this accusation. We have one person denying it. You have Berg denying it. What are the other cast members going to do? That's the point I'm at now. Let's see what happens. Now, obviously, if they come out and they're all like, yeah, it was kind of rough, or, you know, they say they kind of support Ray, then you're kind of like, well, all right.
Yeah.
You know, then good, I guess good for him for getting it out there and for starting the conversation. But I kind of agree with what you said. He probably should have done it behind closed doors and probably addressed the situation first with Whedon or with Berg or Johns or, you know, someone now, even the people in the head of DC now who I'm blanking on, even if he went to them, spoke to them about
Hermata it. Hermata and company.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, did that, something like that, just talk about it.
3 years later, it's like, you know, you haven't, I don't know what was done, what was said, what happened, but like, it's been 3 years, man. Like, it's just weird that this came out now, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like this is, I don't know if there's NDAs and there's contracts or whatnot. I'm not privy to that information, but, you know, 3 years later, you know, it all comes out in the wash, and I guess right now everything's still in the wash.
The one term that he said that kind of I'm the most interested about was the thing where he said it was disgusting. Now, just because that term can mean a lot of things, and I'm just kind of wondering what he saw, what happened to him that made him use that specific term.
Gross, abusive, unprofessional, completely unacceptable. That was, I mean, gross. It's like, gross. And how? Yeah,
gross.
You know, abusive. I could see how verbally, like, you know, you get yelled at and something like that. You take that verbally abuse, depending on, you know, who was doing what, and you know, I'm sure words get. I mean, we've all been in arguments before, and we've all lost our tempers. But yeah. I mean, I don't know. It stinks because I'm a big Geoff Johns fan, and you know, it stinks. When you find out, like, or even when it's possible that someone that you feel like you grew up being almost like who inspired you in a way, or, you know, you looked up to, is not a good person.
Yeah,
Geoff Johns. You know, it's kind of like when I found out that Marty Brodeur slept with his sister-in-law. You're kind of like, oh, dude, that's a bad move. You know, I'm like, man, I can't like you anymore. You cheat on your wife, and then you do it with your sister-in-law. It's like, what is wrong with you?
Yeah.
You know, and it's just – so it's kind of like that. You feel bad when people you personally hold up in high regards, and their character is in question, because it's like, you know, I think a lot of us have a problem separating a person from their work, you know, actors, musicians, you know, stuff like that, you know. I love Chinatown, but Roman Polanski sounds like a horrible person. You know, like it's weird. It's, you know, to separate, you know, church and state, I guess. But I think it's safe to
say that this is only the beginning. I think we're going to hear more and more as time goes on about stories like this. And, you know, we're going to react to them again the way we're reacting now. Because we know, like we've talked about before, that this production was littered with issues all over the place. So,
Just wrong move after wrong move. Everything he did was wrong.
Yeah. I do hope in the end, though, that, you know, whatever the case is, I hope people can, whoever needs to speak to whoever, or maybe talk about it and kind of squash it. I do hope in the end that it turns out in a positive light. Most of the times these situations don't, but I like to be optimistic about it. And I do hope that in the end, this turns out in a positive way.
Yeah. No one at work should be treated in such a way that Ray Fisher described. regardless of career, athlete, actor, singer, you know, teacher, doctor, custodian, you know, just everyone deserves to be respected. And it's just, it is unheartening when you find out that there possibly is a person that bad out there in the world, you know?
Yeah. I mean, again, we don't have examples, so we just have
hearsay, but yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, you're right. If there's someone who has that kind of power, and obviously we've seen with Harvey Weinstein and everything that's happened, we all know the entertainment industry is a dirty business.
So and especially this genre, the superhero genre, which is essentially about helping others, putting, you know, other people in front of your needs and doing what is the greater good, what is the best for everyone. And to hear that, you know, just something like this could have happened on that type of set involving those characters who have such high morals is really disheartening. And it's just like, you know, superheroes are supposed to empower us and bring out the best in us and show us, you know, to steal the light from words from Bruce Wayne himself, to show us the better examples of ourselves, you know, and to find out that the guy who wrote that possibly isn't anything like that. It's just like weird, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, it'd be like if Dr. Seuss was a pedophile, you know, this guy writes children's books, for Christ's sakes. It's a weird thing. So it's like, it's totally ass backwards.
Yeah. For a guy who also gave us, the more hopeful, cheery Superman that everyone wanted to see. We got that version of Superman in Justice League. So,
and it's like, you know, you've heard other things about other productions and Buffy was mentioned and all that stuff. And you wonder, like, how come nothing was said during the Avengers movies? Like, obviously, like, I'm sure it might have been issues there. But again, like, does money solve all problems? Does the fact that those two Avengers movies made a ton of money where they're held in such high regard that, you know, it was able to just slide all this stuff under the rug and just hide it for a little bit?
Yeah. And I mean, obviously in the Avengers, you have established talents like Robert Downey Jr.,
Sam Jackson,
right? Mark Ruffalo, you know, Scarlett Johansson, all of these people are really powerful A-list stars. Chris Hemsworth became one from Chris that. Evans. Yeah. Chris Evans became one. He was kind of there, but Captain America pushed him over, put him over. So you had all these established people where maybe Whedon knew he couldn't push around.
And then again, those people haven't come up to back him up either. So it's like, yes, we are in such this weird limbo phase where I don't want to be the one to just quickly judge. You know, I need a little bit more evidence as a Batman fan. You know, I need to do some detective work.
Yeah, but that's how we all should approach things. You all should wait for the all the details to come out before you condemn somebody. Wait till you get all the information. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, in a situation like this, we may never get that. So I guess at that point, you go with what your gut tells you.
In the words of the great Keanu Reeves, be excellent to each other.
Yeah. Bottom line, yes. That is the bottom line. No matter where you fall in your station in life, just be excellent and kind to as many people as you can.
And I know COVID's really kind of taken over and we're all got cabin fever and everything. And we're dying to get back to real life. But we need to be good people and we need to be good to everyone. And it's a shame when you just turn on the news and you see horrible things happen and people aren't being treated the right way. And it's just, and then to hear something like this, it's just, you know, I feel like there's no escapism anymore and everything just, I can't escape the, you know, the truths of reality for a few hours because it's just, no matter where you look, you just see the ugliness in the world and it's sad.
Yep. Everything overlaps now.
Yeah, it's true. That's it.
Every single thing in life touches the other thing.
Yeah.
And it just creates this ongoing circle and cycle of information and, you know, but again, let's just hope that whatever happens, something good comes out of it. I don't know what that'll be, but let's just hope that in the end, that's what happens.
I agree.
So we got some other news as well. I don't know how long ago, it might have been a few days ago, might even have been last week. There was a fan tweeted out that they wanted to do a fan edit of Shazam. And Shazam is a movie that, it didn't do great box office, right? Like it was okay, it made money. It was over budget, so it made the money. Came in over budget. So it made them money, but it was received well by fans. It's a very, very, what's the word I'm looking for? Not kind-hearted movie. I guess fun. Just it's a very fun film.
It's very emotional.
Right. It's an emotional film. It deals with a heavy issue, but for the most part, it's, you know, it's about they're kids, right? They're teenagers. Which Billy Batson's a teen. Obviously, he turns into an older man, but he's still a teenager, and it kind of has that good-hearted feeling about it. So this was not even though there's some pretty graphically scary parts of this film, especially the scene in the boardroom. That part was pretty graphic and pretty scary. I wouldn't want any young kids.
When you hire a horror director,
yeah, right. Yes. So yeah, you hire a horror director who to do a scene like that. It's gonna be to the nth as it could go as far as they can push the envelope. We're going to do that. So, but I digress. So the people who thought this movie was too, not in the same line of what Zack Snyder was doing with the DCEU, fans wanted to do a fan cut. So this was tweeted. And then the director of Shazam, David S. Sandberg, he retweeted the fan who was going to do the fan cut, whose name is Ronnie OG on Twitter. And
bringing a bad name to OGs everywhere, Ronnie.
So he puts in everything that he wants to do with this specific cut. So he goes on to explain that he wants to have new music and a brand new score, a fresh new color palette, removes humor, quippy one-liners, a darker tone, post-credits scene, which links to Suicide Squad, added scenes which weren't present in the theatrical cut, a true Man of Steel cameo. Don't know how he was going to get Henry Cavill to do that, but that's beside the point. And additional visual effects.
This guy sounds like he was one of the producers on Justice League. He just remade the whole movie.
Pretty much, right? Yeah. So Sandberg retweets this with a clip from Alanis Morissette's Ironic video. And she's driving. It's the scene where she's driving in the car and she's kind of looking and you see the rearview mirror and all, you know. So there's been a lot of speculation about what exactly he was saying. So, Pete, I'll ask you first. What do you think his retweet with that response means?
Isn't it ironic? Don't you think? It's just funny how a guy who has released the Snyder Cut in his Twitter handle or his Twitter name is just doing what was done to his favorite director, and he's just butchering his movie. And you know, people are claiming that, well, it's a fan cut. This isn't, you know, that big of a deal, but it just seems very hypocritical when you're fighting for, you know, Zach to have his film, and then you're claiming that this film didn't do it justice, so you're going to edit it yourself. It just seems very hypocritical to me.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what I think he means as well. He's basically saying, look, you wanted the Snyder Cut, you got it, but you're going to take my movie now and redo it completely, strip it down for me, the original director, of what my vision was. You want to change that because it didn't go in line with what you wanted to see. So also,
Ronnie is hashtagging release the air cut, so, you know, he's got his priorities in check.
Yeah, man. So he has I kind of laughed when I read it because I was like, oh, man, like, come on. This is the same thing that happened. I remember when after The Last Jedi came out and there was a group of fans who said they were going to get a crew together and redo the movie. And then I remember Rian Johnson just answering like, oh, please do this. I so want to see what this comes out like.
I mean, I'm looking at his, like, you know, his wish list, and I'm like, post-credits scene, which links to Suicide Squad. Like, how is he doing that? Suicide Squad came out how many years before Shazam?
Yep.
It just, a lot of this just sounds really dumb.
Yeah. You know? And like I said, the Man of Steel cameo, a true Man of Steel cameo. Does he know Henry Cavill?
Yeah. He's going to take some scene from Man of Steel and try to, like, splice it in there, you know? What's his name? Chris Dawson does with the was a black suit edition or something like that. Like
that's probably what he would do.
He's done some pretty cool stuff. And hey, look, I mean, the fact that you know, this guy can do this stuff on Final Cut or Avid or Premiere, whatever he's doing, you know, kudos to you, man. Because I mean, I couldn't do this. I don't have the time or the energy or the motivation. But you know, like you know, I hope your skills are good because you're gonna need it.
We've discussed offline before about fan edits, and I know you've said you're not fond of them anyway.
Fan edits, fan trailers, it's not my thing. When you kind of take, you know, a cast of characters from seven different movies and the lines and the dialogue seems to sound like it makes sense, but you know, you're stealing from other stuff and you're mm-hmm. splicing it together. It's just, it's very weird to me. And also I felt like that this movie, now I know people who are Shazam fans were not essentially happy that this was taking the horrible Jeff Johns New 52 Shazam, you know, that concept of what the character was, the boy in the adult body, and not doing like the true, like when Billy turns into Shazam, he becomes right. like almost Superman-esque, more wiser and older, as you say. But this version of Shazam was very faithful to, you know, source material, albeit like later on. I really dug this movie. I it's become one of my Christmas staples along with Batman Returns. I watch both and I love Shazam. It's great. I remember when I took my girlfriend to see it, she absolutely adored the movie. She was really into it. It's very emotional. When they say quippy one-liners and removed humor, there is so much depressing stuff in this movie, you know,
yeah.
From, who did Mark Strong play? What was his character's name? Savannah's history with his family, his brother and his father. Then you have Billy's mother. Then you find out the truth about Billy's mother. And then you have the horror scenes. And there's a lot of crazy stuff. The seven deadly sins in general, just that whole topic. Yeah. Like this movie isn't, it's not an MCU film, you know, it's, there's no barf, you know, there's no stupid jokes. I don't think that the quippy one-liners are an issue. I think it fits within the tone, you know, like get him, Batman. Like it makes sense. It makes sense to me. Like made sense to me.
Like you said, he's still a little in this version. He's still the 13, 14, mm-hmm. whatever.
The only bad thing about Shazam, I think, are the kids were cast too old. And now for Shazam 2, they're like juniors in college.
Yeah, so. I don't know how they're going to handle that going forward. And especially if they haven't started filming yet, this is going to be interesting. Because Asher Angel is actually also, he does music. Mm-hmm. I'm like, if you see him every once in a while, you see him, and if you see like a cut of him or somewhere in a video, I'm kind of like, yeah, he doesn't have that such a youthful look anymore.
I haven't seen him since Shazam, but like, I remember when he got cast and they released the promo photo, he looked so young, but then like you see the movie and you're like, oh wow, he looked like he aged a little bit. Like he really, he hit his growth spurt.
Yeah. So I don't know, unless they're going to keep it going with the fact that they like space it out. So when he still says it in his 20s, then he's actually an older Shazam. What do you mean he's Shazam? I don't know.
And that still could be really cool. I mean, the whole point of like, because then essentially he's almost like a Spider-Man, a Peter Parker, you know, dealing with real life, probably living on like, you know, temp jobs pay and living in a studio apartment and still having to be, you know, so it could still be really cool. It's as he gets older, but like when we think of Shazam, we typically think of like a 7-year-old, and it's tough to cast a kid that young in a role like that. I mean, like we're going back to like one of Rick Shue's staple arguments is that Gordon's son, it ruins the scene at the end of Dark Knight because he's a bad actor. A lot of kid actors are bad actors. Not everyone's JTT, you know.
And he's a kid, so. Like you need a kid. They needed a kid for the film. I mean, what are you going to do?
But like, he's not the major star of the movie, so he can get away with it, you know. Whereas you need somebody of Asher Angel's caliber, who's been, like you said, he's fame is not new to him, you know, and he's used to this type of lifestyle and just the rigmarole and the responsibilities, and he knows how to be. He's a professional. You know, even at a young age, he's a professional, and you know, you're not going to get
And Jack Dylan Grazer too.
Yeah, well, I mean, he was great in it.
I loved his casting. I was a big fan of Freddy in this movie.
Oh, I mean, the whole cast in general. You know, there's There's not much to say. I mean, I all I can say about Shazam is I have nitpicks. And like I said, the kids are a little too old. I think Mary Marvel should have had her I think it was her white skirt as opposed to being all red. But like I did nothing to complain about. It's just little nitpicks. The movie's an A+. It's arguably the best DCEU film, as I've told you, behind Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
You know, as like if we're just talking like films in general, like Wonder Woman, Shazam, Aquaman, Man of Steel, BVS, Suicide Squad, Justice League. I think that's how you would like. Did I miss something? Oh, Birds of Prey is above probably BVS if I had to. You know,
just yeah. I mean, I don't think you put Suicide Squad, but if you're just keeping within this universe, I would agree with
DCEU,
that. We would probably have differ on where certain movies go, but Shazam is definitely in the upper echelon of the films for me. So I enjoy that. It's like you said, it's got a lot of heart and it's got a lot of horror, but it's a very fun film. It's fun to watch. It's an easy watch. Mm-hmm. So I don't know why anyone would want to change it. Especially to make it more gritty. I mean, when you think of the subject matter, to me, it's not gritty subject matter. So I don't know.
If you want to recut a movie and make it gritty, I want you to recut Batman and Robin. Do that.
Let's send Steel.
Can you make Steel better?
Let's send Ronnie a tweet and tell him to redo Batman and Robin.
Yeah, Batman and Robin, Steel, Jonah Hex. I got a list of movies, man, that you can Fantastic Steel. Four, any one of them. You want to make those better?
Steel. You brought up we discussed Steel way too much on this show, by the way.
Have we brought it up more than once?
Well, we discussed it with Justin when Justin was on, and now we're discussing it again.
I recently, before comic shops reopened, I bought a whole run of Steel comics just to support my local shop from, I think it was like 93. So I'm dying actually to get into that. So I actually have an entire like 36 issue run of Steel in my house right now that I'm dying to crack open.
Oh, so you haven't read it yet. You just bought it.
I just bought it. Well, I'm also in a horrible backlog. Like, cause I'm like, I feel like right now I've watched everything. I've read everything. I want to do nothing. I was like, I want to get back to work.
Just a quick sidebar for you. I'm progressing in Harley Quinn. I'm almost done with season one.
Oh, really? Well, I'm done with season two.
So when I finally finish, we could talk about it. I am enjoying it so far.
We'll have to get Gigi on. I know he's loving it as well.
We definitely could have Garrett on, and we'll discuss that with him. So, in keeping up with the Man of Steel cameo thing, you know, since he wanted to add the real Man of Steel in his cut, the real Man of Steel actually spoke about the incessant discussion of him on social media and other circles of his return to Superman. And if he's going to play the part again, if there's discussions going on, if it's over, if it's done, a done deal. So he was doing, Henry Cavill was doing, did an interview in the Variety magazine. And they asked him about his return as Superman. So he and the rumors that swirl around it. So he said, and I quote, "They get wilder and wilder by the day. The amount of speculation, the stuff I read on the internet, is extraordinary and sometimes frustrating. It's when you see people stating stuff as fact, like, no, that's not the case, that hasn't happened, and that conversation isn't happening. But the important thing is that people are excited about it, and I think it's important to be excited about a character like Superman. Superman is a fantastic character. If people are chatting about it, and even if they're making stuff up, it's okay, because that means they want to see the character again. And in an ideal world, I would absolutely love to play the character again." So then they asked him if he's ever been tempted to comment on the rumors using an alias. And he said, "I'm not going to lie, I've been very tempted, but there's something about that that feels deeply immoral. When it's about Superman, and if I'm representing Superman, it just feels like the wrong thing to do. I'm just going to let this all play out. Me saying something isn't going to make a difference. What does it really matter? One day people will know the truth, and if they don't know it now, it's okay." So this is the first time that he's kind of addressed the speculation around his return. He's hinted things before, But this is the first time where he's actually speaking about the rumors that are going on the outside. It's interesting to read that he obviously, we know he still wants to play the character, but it was interesting to hear his take on the rumors. So what did you think about the quote, Pete?
Does this guy embody Superman or what? I mean, he literally just says, like, I don't want to create a burner account and lie because I represent Superman. I mean, that is like, I mean, in an era where, like, I hear Dean Cain sound like a moron every day on Fox News, and then to hear Cavill talk like, you know, Kal-El from Krypton, it's a complete mind boggle to me. But I think it's great that the fan Cavill and the fans have a great relationship, and I wish more people would follow Henry's steps. I feel like Henry does things a little bit more respectfully than some people on social media. I think Henry is very classy in how he does things. He doesn't really kind of create hysteria and chaos as much as he just kind of responds to questions and interviews. But I would love to see another, I would love a Man of Steel 2, a Man of Tomorrow, Son of Krypton, whatever the hell they want to call it. I'd love to see another Superman film with Henry again. And it's, I do thoroughly enjoy Man of Steel. He got shafted in BVS and Justice League. We know about that. We've talked about that too much. It's just, mm-hmm. he's gotten a raw deal out of his three movies, and he's fantastic. And you know, he wants to do it. I wish they would find a director, and I wish Warner Brothers was motivated to do it, because Superman on film is just, it's a wonderful thing, and he's arguably the second greatest comic book character in the history of the medium, and he deserves better than he's been treated.
Yeah. I mean, that's that last part's definitely true. And the one part that of the quote that kind of hit me at first, or hit me when I first read it, was that the part where he says that conversation isn't happening. Cause we've heard so many rumors about, oh, they're talking about it. Now, obviously he has to say that if there's any negotiation going on, he can't actually put that out in the public, cause that just opens a floodgates and for the rest of us. So, but he actually said that conversation isn't happening, and he's never said that before. Mm-hmm. So that was the part of the quote that I was kind of like, because I like you, I want to see him play the role again. I felt like the one thing that I did get from the three films, including Justice League, is you did kind of get a turn. You got the turn at the end that everyone wanted to see, and it put together when he turns and he becomes the more hopeful, happy character, obviously, after Resurrection. So
you just didn't get enough of it. That's the problem. Yeah,
right. So I'd like to see more of that. Now, obviously, what we get is not going to be an extension from that Justice League, whatever. I'm sure they'll do it outside of that, or somehow weave it into the story somehow that didn't happen, or I don't know how they'd approach it.
Hey, look, if we're going to forget Batman Forever and Batman and Robin, then we could easily forget Justice League and BVS and just do a direct sequel. I mean, Warner Brothers has pretty much said they're ignoring the Schumacher films. And it seems like they have no problem doing a multiverse type thing. And
yeah,
I don't know. What if there's a, what if on Earth 37, there's a, I don't know, a Superman who looks just like the Superman from Earth Snyder. I don't know. At this point, just make a movie. I think that's where we're all at. And that's regardless of character. I mean, we're going to get Keaton, we're going to get Pattinson. So therefore, like, Warner Brothers is, you know, they're letting things ride a little bit, and they're taking some chances. So why can't they do that with Superman? Because they're doing it with Batman.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, this is a good time also for me to put in that we will be doing a Superman on film episode soon. Pete and I have talked about this, and we're going to go through all the Superman movies and break them down a little bit and do our rankings. And
you know, Brandon Routh was just Superman again, Keaton style.
Yes.
If anything, it's not Keaton style, it's Routh style. You know, like, he came back and picked up where his character left off at the end of Superman Returns. That's that Superman.
Yep.
You know,
and exactly. And including Miller in the Crisis on Infinite Earths on the CW brings that whole universe into the conversation.
Yeah. And so, like I said, they're doubling down on the multiverse. And I mean, that's great, because that's, again, like, me and Eric get into fights all the time about source material and honoring source material, and they're finally doing it the right way.
I don't know if we get into fights.
We get into fights about Spider-Man way too often.
Well, yeah, part of that's just fun, but It's just fun for me to nag you on it.
When you're wrong, you can get away with it.
It's just something that irks you. I know that it does. So I kind of poke the bear.
I will never let a good Peter get beaten down like that. I'm just saying. We stick together. Me, Peter Parker, Peter Serretta, any other Peter Venkman, you name it. Like, we're all together in this, guys. I'm not letting you guys down. Peter Bretter.
Oh, it's a good Peter. It's just a different one. Just be happy.
We don't have time.
I said we'll do an episode on it if you want.
Another podcast.
We will do a Spider-Man episode, or we could discuss the Raimi Spider-Man movies. We can discuss the Garfield and Emma Stone Amazing Spider-Man movies, and then obviously the MCU version of Spider-Man. And then cross-reference it with source material, because there is source material for the current MCU Spider-Man, no matter how much you want to deny it.
I never said there wasn't. It's not good. It's not good source material.
Okay, but it exists, right? So you still have a reference.
That's like saying, I want to make a Batman movie, but I want to be inspired by Shadow of the Bat.
Or All-Star Batman and Robin.
I don't mind All-Star Batman and Robin. You don't? No, that would be crazy. If you want to make that an Elseworlds movie, I'm all for that. Like, I'm the goddamn Batman. Here, Dick Grayson, eat these rats. Like, it's...
Like, yeah, a lot of people, that's a controversial one, because a lot of people don't like that story, but
It never finished.
Yeah, that's true. Never finished. So, that's funny stuff.
Well, that was that rant. I don't even know what the topic was.
It was Cavill addressing his return. Okay. Rumors of his return.
Let's get back on track here.
So yeah, but we kind of finished that one, so let's just move on. So I threw this out at you before, and I told you to be prepared for it, so now we're going to bring it up. So this is something fun that I want to try this time. We both obviously like various intellectual properties within science fiction, or whatever you want to call it, fantasy, whatever you want to call it. So I asked you to pick one intellectual property that you want to be made into a movie. It can't be one that was already made. And I want you to pick who you want to direct it and who you want to star in the film.
Oh, I'm horrible at fan casting. That wasn't in the message. The director was. The star wasn't.
All right. You can just do director. You don't have to do the star. I'll let you off this one.
I would love to see a Metal Men movie directed by Paul Feig? Paul Feig?
Yeah, Feig.
No, Feige's the MCU guy.
Yeah, I know, but yeah.
Paul Feig. I think it would fit his style. He's very comedic outside of the Ghostbusters 2016. I think Paul Feig is a very, very good comedic director, and just that whole atmosphere of the Metal Men, I think he would gel with, and I think it'll be an interesting. It might be a little bit of an expensive movie with all the CGI characters, but I think it would be something different, a comic book comedy, you know.
Mm-hmm. And you don't have any idea who you'd want?
Oh man, it's just
as the main lead.
Jeez. Well, it's weird because it's kind of like a Ninja Turtles movie where they would have like people stand in and they would do voiceover work. So it's, I don't know. I'm so bad with fan casting. Like, I want George Clooney and everything. I have no idea. I'm bad at fan casting. I can't do this, you know?
All right.
The only fan cast I ever say, and this is the only time, I'll say this all the time, but I like I said, I want Clooney as Mr. Fantastic in the next Fantastic Four film. You know,
that would be something.
Yeah, that's me personally, but that's the only fan cast I do because, I don't know, I love George, you know.
It would have to be an older...
Reed should be older.
A real older version, like much older.
I think Reed should be older than Reed and Sue should be older than Johnny. Ben can be kind of in between somewhere, but in my opinion.
Okay. Well, mine is an intellectual property I've loved since I'm a kid. It was a famous cartoon growing up. There's two versions of it. One's with lions and one's with vehicles. If that gives a hint to anyone. I would love to see a Voltron live action film. I don't know how they would do it because
Michael Bay.
Well, that was, believe it or not, he was one of the first ones that came to mind. I'm like, well, he can kind of do that kind of a film pretty well.
Yeah, but it's just Transformers.
Right. Well, it's kind of like Transformers.
Transformers meets Power Rangers, kind of, I guess.
In a way. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, humans, man, the lions, like you have pilots and stuff in.
I didn't know Voltron had cars. I always thought they were lions.
Yeah, the lions is the more popular one, but there is another Voltron. I think it's called Voltron 2, actually, okay. Where it's a bunch of vehicles that form the big giant robot of Voltron. And that was also a cartoon when I was growing up in the 80s.
There are two things that you love that I totally missed out on just because you're an old man. Voltron and He-Man.
Yes.
You love that. I missed the boat. I did.
Well, Grev is close to your age, and he's a huge He-Man fan.
My buddy Ryan is a huge. My buddy Ryan Murphy. He's got a huge He-Man tattoo on his calf. So
wow.
Yeah, I never got into He-Man though, but I was a big G.I. Joe, Ghostbusters, Turtles, Batman, Spider-Man kid.
That's okay. You know, I kind of like the last of the things that maybe, or of the, you know, like the childhood characters of, or groups of characters that you probably liked. I don't know if you do that. I kind of was on the edge of where I was kind of like growing and not into it as much. It was probably the Ninja Turtles.
Mm-hmm.
They were kind of coming up when I was kind of getting past the age where I thought it wasn't cool anymore to like that stuff.
I want to hang out with girls. I can't like this kid stuff.
Right. Like, yeah, there's other things. I got more into sports and girls and at that point. So, but the guy who I'd want to direct it is Alfonso Cuarón.
Okay.
Yeah, I think he could kind of do the movie justice. And the actor I would like to be cast in the lead character. Well, there's kind of five leads, so it'd be tough to do all of them. But Keith is probably the main one in here, and I brought him up for Batman before, and I kind of like his work in dramas or science mm-hmm. fiction. I think he'd be good. Is Benjamin Walker? So that's the guy I'd want to lead the cast for my Voltron movie.
Can I throw one more thing in there that's just popped in my head?
Sure.
I would actually like really like to see a Slam Bradley like detective noir movie in like let's say like 1950s, 60s, California, China, almost like kind of like Chinatown. But I would like to have David Ayer and Antoine Fuqua team up again and write direct that thing.
That would be good.
Yeah. I think that would be like, you know, like little hints of Training Day, little hints of Chinatown, stuff like that. And I don't know if you're familiar with the character of Slam Bradley, but he was,
I am.
He's one of the great DC detectives. And he's kind of like Harvey Bullock, but like you kind of want to, I don't know. He's very similar to Harvey, but he's not as angry. You know, he's kind of more of an everyman, but it'd be cool to see that in live action.
You would have to have, that would have to be a noir film. Just because of the time period the character was written in or began, think you'd have to do
in that. In the Brubaker, Ed Brubaker comic book run of Catwoman that I forget, I think it was early 2000s, Slam made a return and had, he was part of Catwoman's like network and crew. So, keeping an eye on her because he was secretly in love with Selina.
We have gotten a live action version of him recently.
Incredible.
Want to take a guess where?
Oh, God. Is it Gotham?
No. Not Gotham.
Oh God!
But you're on the right track.
I don't know. Tell me.
Batwoman. He's in Batwoman.
Oh, I haven't gotten there yet. Okay.
Yeah.
Who played him
in Batwoman?
Who played Slam?
Kurt Sarka. I have no idea who that guy is.
This guy looks like I gotta Google this guy real quick. Who's this guy? Kurt Sarka.
So, yeah. But no, I agree. That would be kind of a fun kind of, or even a
this guy is too good looking to be Slam Bradley. He's got no belly either. Come on, this guy's not Slam.
Or even kind of a series on him would be cool.
Yeah,
weekly series, right?
I a nice little detective story. Yeah, I can do it. Just, a little cop movie. You know, it's just cool to me. I've always liked Slam. He's just an interesting side character. So.
Well, maybe if we would have gotten the Gotham show we were promised, it would have had something like that. It would have been something like that.
Right? The show on Fox I do not speak of.
Sorry, yes, I forgot. That's our Voldemort on this show. Cannot speak of that show. Oh, really quick, I saw your buddy tweeted something funny the other day. I'm not gonna tell you what it is here.
Who? Which buddy?
Say Chun. Your buddy Say Chun.
Oh, me and I. God.
You would have gotten.
He frustrates me.
Well, whatever.
That show in general frustrates me.
So, just really quickly to everyone out there, after you listen to this, if you want to tweet at us, or we'll actually put it up on the Twitter page as well. But if you want to tweet at us, email us, give us a movie again of an IP that has not been done that you would like to see done, who's the director, and who you would like to star in that film. So, that's homework for you guys. So.
Yeah, we'd love to hear from the audience.
Yeah, and then we can break it down the next show, or we'll have a back and forth, obviously, on social media. It'll be something fun we can do. Oh, Pete, do you want to tell everyone on air who won the vehicle poll?
Yes, I do. So, our Batwing Finals, our aerial champion, our king in the clouds, is, in a landslide, Batwing 1989.
Yeah,
you made it happen. You voted. You made your voices heard, and you have chosen Batwing 1989 as your favorite bat plane. It beat out the Batman 66 helicopter in.
I don't know how that made the finals, but anyway.
Because I did all the Batwings versus each other, and then the copter stands alone because it's the only one. So it's like its own genre. So like all the Batwings faced each other, and you know it's. It's kind of what I did something else like that. I did one of it's because you gotta like I'm only doing live action stuff, so I kind of have to like draw the line somewhere. And I figured the copter wouldn't have beaten any of the live action Batwings, so I kind of I had to make it interesting.
I knew from the beginning 89 would win.
I actually thought the copter was gonna hold its own because the bat actually made a huge comeback. In its third round against, I forget who the hell it was going up against. But the bat came back against, the BVS Batwing. The bat came back in like the last like 2 hours and actually surged past it. And I was really shocked. But 84% to 15% fade over the 89 Batwing. And I was just really surprised at how the copter just didn't stand a chance.
It really didn't.
It had no shot. I actually thought it was going to be a closer final than it was.
Oh, well.
But
better luck next time, Batcopter.
I don't know. I'm holding off on the Batmobile because I think that should be the last one before we get – eventually we're going to do champions versus champions. So we'll have our Bat Ski Boat, our Batwing 89. There will be a Bat Cycle poll as well. So they're all coming, and then we'll find out which one's our favorite vehicle.
For the Batmobile, you can almost do like a NCAA tournament bracket. There's been so many.
there are so many of them. I don't know if I should like pit up like Joel's against Joel's, you know, like,
yeah,
I got to figure out what I want to do. The Schumacher region. we have the realism region, you know, the
Burton region,
the Burton region and the West region. So, it'd be interesting. That should be a fun one too. Which I think the 66 Batmobile will actually, make some noise.
I think that one might win.
Yeah,
that one might take it.
The 66 vehicles out of the ones that we've done, copter and batboat, have actually not had have not fared too well, which I was kind of surprised. The batboat from 66 lost to Forever, and I was kind of shocked by that, to be honest with you.
That the 66 Batmobile is like a convertible T-top type of thing. How could that not win?
I don't know. I mean, well, how could you lose to Anton? How could any of them lose, to be honest with you? I mean,
yeah,
if B&R's wins, that's the biggest upset. Like, let's be honest.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's for sure. We could do a gadgets one for, and Batman and Robin would have some of the weirdest.
A bat mom.
Yeah. Oh, man. Oh, okay. Well, on that note, I think we're about to wrap this one up. So, Pete, anything currently out there you want to talk about, want to plug?
Follow me on social media, Instagram, Vero, Twitter, at Pete Illustrated, I have a new review of Funko Pop's Batman 80 Batman and Robin Silver Suit up on BOF proper, BOF YouTube. It's on my Twitter handle. Check it out. And please don't forget, Straight Out of Gotham at @straight_O_G on Twitter. Same thing for Instagram. Follow us and, you know, just interact and talk with us. And Eric, tell them about the new form of social media we're on.
Yeah, I mentioned it before. We finally have a Facebook page. So if you go to Facebook, I actually sent the link out on our from our Twitter handle earlier before. So if you guys want to just go check that out, I'll send it again. If you're on Facebook, come in there, ask to be in, you know, invited, and we'll let you in. It'll be a fun place for us to kind of talk. You guys can post things, throw stuff at us, critique us.
Not literally, not like tomatoes, but like ideas.
Yeah. Yeah, like ideas and for shows or things you might want to see, ask us to cover. That'd be a good place to do that. There's also going to be a group next to it. That'll be more for fan discussion and stuff. The groups on Facebook are better for that kind of thing. So it's going to be linked to the page. So I'll have that put in there as well. And we can start getting that going and starting dialogue there. Also, I'm in the midst, as I said before, of also setting up our YouTube page where you can also find the podcast. So I'm going to start posting the podcast to YouTube as well. It's another place for you guys to go and listen to us. If you choose to listen to it, if you prefer YouTube there. Pete and I have also discussed doing some live things going forward, either on YouTube or on Twitter with Periscope or on Facebook Live or some kind of deal like that. You know, we're trying to put together more content, get things out to you, even stuff where you can interact with us while we're live. I like doing that when we did the Green Room show for Batman on Film. For Gotham, I enjoyed doing having the live interaction. So
we're trying to do something cool for DC fandom. Like, we want to do something a little unorthodox or something that we're not used to, just to kind of create some buzz and just positive reaction.
Yeah. And we're also trying to book a couple of guests, you know, out there in the geek universe, I guess, the comic universe, the movie universe, people you might know, people you might follow. We're trying to do some of that, get so we can have other guests and interview them. And so we can, they can talk about their experiences and how they came to love Batman or whatever character we bring them on to discuss. So we want to throw more of that content at you as well. Finally, I just want to say, like I said before, this is episode 9. We've been doing this now for 2 months, which is crazy. There's been a lot of content, and every time I look at the analytics for the show, it always seems to be positive. We're always seem to be climbing. You guys seem to be supporting us and downloading our show or listening to it on Podbean. So again, thank you so much for all the love. We appreciate it. We enjoy doing this, and we talked about it for a long time, and now that we finally got it going, I want to keep it going because you guys seem to like us and want us to keep going. So. Now that I got all that out, I will tell you, hit me on Twitter at @finally33, spell @finale33. Same thing on Instagram. And of course, Pete referenced the Straight Outta Gotham Twitter handle. I answer that as well. So if you're looking for me, you can find me there. For Pete Vera, I'm Eric Holzman. This is Straight Outta Gotham. Thank you for listening. Talk to you later.